welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 102. After weeks and weeks of tons of news, new and interesting titles, we actually have a really quiet week this week, so it's probably going to be a short show, we shall see. But let's introduce our panel. We have, as always, Daniel.
Hello.
And we have our reoccurring seventh chair, I guess, technically, Phil.
How did you say I've been here seven times?
No, I said seventh chair, because technically there's six people on this show.
Oh, all right.
Technically.
But yes, as you know, weekends happen, folks are gone, so we called in Phil for some assistance. Yeah, it's been a very quiet week as far as news and stuff, but we have newish games to talk about. And we can kick it off with Phil, who has been playing the most recent thing. So take it away.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Fire Emblem Awakening, and it is fantastic. I have never played a Fire Emblem game ever, so this is my first foray into that series. There are very little series where I've never played a single game. Another one of which is Animal Crossing, which I will also probably get the 3DS.
I will be curious to hear your impressions, because as a person who has tried Animal Crossing, I don't get the appeal of that franchise.
Well, I loved Harvest Moon. Like, Harvest Moon for the PlayStation 64, that one specifically, I fell in love with. And then I got back into it on the PS2 era, but then I fell out of it. But, I see where they're coming from. Like, I'm excited to get back into that style of game, especially, like, the Nintendo charm of that style of game. Anyway, Fire Emblem Awakening. I missed XCOM. I have not played XCOM. And the last strategy game that I played was Valkyria Chronicles, which I did not even finish. Not because I didn't like the game, but just because I had rented it and then I brought it back and been able to find it again, because it's not on the PlayStation Network for some reason, so I can buy it. But yeah, it's awesome. It's very... I don't know how to... I guess it's in between being a casual, like a very accessible strategy game, and being a hardcore strategy game. It's like the best of both worlds. It eases you in, and then it's like, okay... So, I should probably add that I'm playing it on like the classic mode, where people can die forever, and that is probably the most intense stuff going in that game, because all of my characters that I level up are like assets to the team, and I never bring like B-sides into a fight with me. So when somebody dies, it is like a huge hit to my team, and I'm starting now I'm far enough in the game where, if a guy dies like halfway through an hour long, I don't sleep. But, I've learned to play like super strategic, super defensive, and everybody's always in tight corners, so my most valuable teammates are never gonna die. And then they have, like, cool relationship-building stuff. There's, like, a lot of things in that game.
You said that your teammates wouldn't die, so are you you're not doing the traditional, I guess not traditional, what do they call it? The version where your teammates can't die.
I'm not doing that mode. I'm doing the classic mode where your teammates can die. Forever.
Okay.
And which kind of... interests me, because there's a lot of those characters that I guess can die forever that are meaningful to the story. So I'm kind of curious as to how the story scenes will play out with some of those people dying, especially the main character that you get to create. It doesn't seem like it's mandatory for him to live, but I haven't really tested that theory out. But it's like some of the characters that you're allowed to die, I don't know how the story would play out without them. So that's kind of cool. And then I just finished Dead Space 3 a few days ago, I guess. And Has anybody else played Dead Space 3?
I'm not a fan of the franchise.
Oh, you're not a fan of the franchise. Okay.
It has EA written on it, and I'm not going to say any more than that.
I've got no major beef with EA, but I've tried the first one. It's just not my cup of tea.
Right. I didn't play the first one, but I love the second one to death. And the third one is very disappointing. So it's okay. It's not a bad game fundamentally, I guess, but it's very long.
I was kind of turned off the moment so at some point you see humans in it, and I was like, nah.
Yes.
Even if I didn't care about this EA thing, I was like, nah, humans.
Absolutely. Those are the absolute worst parts of the game, are the parts when you have to shoot humans. Fortunately, whenever you do have to shoot humans, it's only like literally just like a minute at a time, and then like monsters just come back. But yeah, those are the worst parts of the game. Like, the game starts with you shooting humans, just like ducking undercover and shooting humans, and I was like, I almost quit like right there. Like, I was like, I do not want to play this game anymore. But then it got Dead Spacey for the first third of the game, and then it got, I don't know, it just gets so boring. And speaking of boring, I have also been playing Ni No Kuni.
That's not a great segue.
And I've constantly been going back and forth between, like, do I like this game? Do I not like this game? It starts off very, very slow. JRPG starting off slow, right? Who knew? But this one starts off very slow. And personally, I'm not, like, it seems like a big thing about this game is, like, the charm for a lot of people. And it's just not affecting me as much as it seems to be affecting a lot of the people who do like the game. Because, I don't really enjoy anything about the story, especially not the character. I think the protagonist, Oliver, is the worst protagonist ever. And most of the characters, the voice acting is all over the place. But then when sort of the game mechanics started opening up, side quests started to come out, I started enjoying it. I was like, yeah, there's a lot of layers here. This is very fun. And then hours later, after I got used to a lot of the mechanics, I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of boring again because the battles are so constant and there's nothing to the actual battle system. Like, the mechanics around the battle system are really interesting, like building up your monsters and all the menus and stuff. But battling itself is kind of just like straightforward, and you know, just the old thing of hold down or keep tapping X and win the battle. I went back and forth, and I've sat on that game for an entire month, over a month now actually. But and then I said, you know what, this is gonna be the last weekend. I'm gonna give it a good go. If I beat it, then excellent. If I don't, and I didn't, now I've given up on that. So, but yeah, that's what I've been playing. Beat DMC as well, and DMC was fantastic. I had a lot of fun with that. And then I'm
not allowed to like DMC.
I'm sorry.
You're not allowed to like that game.
No, you're allowed to like the game. You're not allowed to call it a Devil May Cry game.
Okay.
That is fun. We had Chad talk about that, and he enjoyed it, but he doesn't believe that. He feels like the baggage that comes with it being a DMC game has turned people off because it's a pretty solid action game.
They could have probably gotten around just with that. They could just call it something else and rename the character.
Yeah, but I mean, and this kind of goes into French. It didn't work for Bayonetta, though. Bayonetta is not a great selling game.
But DMC games aren't that big. Not really.
Well, I mean, DMCs were multi. Devil May Cry were multi-million selling franchises. Bayonetta wasn't. So, I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of like, do you stick a known franchise in there, or do you try something new with the same foundations? Because then, you know, like the counterpart would have been like a lot of people might have said this was too much like DMC. Like, why didn't they just make it a new Devil May Cry game? So yeah. And you haven't been playing anything new yourself, right, Daniel?
I played The Simpsons Tapped Out for a bit because it came out on Android. This was weeks ago, and then, I mean, I wouldn't call it a game because I don't call them kinds of things games. So a good term that I heard, I can't remember where I heard it, a good term that I heard was cow clicker, because that sums it up pretty much. And I was kind of enjoying it, even though it's not a game, because it's just something to do, and it's kind of humorous because it's Simpsons. And then one morning, I sort of turned my Nexus 7 on to check on it, and my save was gone, so I'm not playing that ever again. other than that, I'm playing Call of Duty right now, and I'm hating every second of it.
Why are you playing it?
Because I need something to shoot people at, and I don't have any other games that let me do that.
You can't find a game to shoot people at in this industry?
I can't find a game to shoot people at in that's popular.
What Call of Duty are you playing?
Black Ops 2.
I've not played that.
It's the best of the bad bunch, I mean.
Okay. personally, I've been playing, I checked out a couple of games because, one, Microsoft is having a major sale on Xbox Live, which they should do more often.
Yeah, it's nice to see that, like, a Steam sort of sale on the Xbox for once.
Yeah. And, PSN Plus is always over here giving out free games. So, on the PSN Plus side, I tried out Vanquish, which I hear is a really great third-person shooter beloved by a lot of people. And right now, I just don't get it. Like, I can see the appeal to the game, and it has some fun mechanics, but right now, it's just not...
Wait, are you trying to pay attention to the story?
No, I'm not trying to pay attention to the story.
Stop doing that.
Because the story to me, it's like, it's the same thing with Azeroth's Wrath and even Kid Icarus Uprising. And this is where I think Japan's strength is. It's like when they play to their, you know, like, they go batshit insane.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I'm all for that. I'm all for people screaming and shouting and being, giant character versions of actual people. Like, they don't want you to back these people. Yeah. They want you to have fun with these characters. And I'm all for that. I mean, like, your first encounter is like a giant robot boss. So at some point, you're not taking this game seriously.
I think with Japan, for me, is when they really nail the story, they really nail the story. And when they don't, it's really bad. There's no, like, in-between. Like, a lot of Western games, I can be like, yeah, this is okay, this is mediocre. But with Japanese games, I'm either like, I really love this, or I really hate this.
I could see that. Personally speaking, I feel like that's more of a Western thing, because you kind of know the tropes of this story, which is why a lot of game stories don't interest me, because they just tend to be poor versions of, like, bad movie scripts. Like, I mean, most, like, Call of Duty would be, like, a poor man saving Private Ryan or something like that. And it doesn't even have that emotional impact to it, but I digress. I'm enjoying it. It's just not something that has, like, hooked me yet. So I haven't really touched it in, like, 4 days. I'm pretty early in. I do like that you get a range of weapons. And I like how they do the upgrade system, I guess, where you can power up a gun if you have it in inventory.
Yeah.
You have, like, a full kit. So it's an interesting thing. Like, you do use this gun and hope for the best, or do you wait until you can kind of power it up later on? And if, you know, after powering it up several times, you can get out for another gun. It's fairly, so far it's fairly generic enemies. It's like giant android robots and stuff like that. Which I say fairly generic, we don't get many games like that, but from a Japanese standpoint, I think they're fairly generic enemies. Hopefully I play more of it, and hopefully I see what everybody loves about it. The other game I've been playing, and I started this last, and I just faded it right before you started this podcast, is Dead Island, which, if you remember, hopefully you do, because it was this huge game that got this huge boom in 2011 after this amazing trailer that Tony doesn't match the game at all. But that disconnect aside, I'm actually kind of enjoying it so far. And right now it's kind of like Left 4 Dead meets Borderlands. It's a first person. I mean, I assume that shooting becomes an element, but right now all I have are melee weapons.
Yeah, the game concentrates on melee weapons, and you do get guns, but they're not very useful for the most part. Like, you're better off just using melee weapons.
I assume so, because even without the melee weapons, like, your fists are pretty damn damaging, and so is your kick. So yeah, I mean, there's a very satisfying crunch to just kicking the crap out of his humpies, or the infected, whatever they want to call them. I do like that, like, it has kind of that throw-in co-op element that, like, Borderlands has, where you don't necessarily need to stick together.
Yeah.
It's beneficial if you do, but you don't need, like, you know, you can have, like, four different objectives and have four different people going in four different directions and stuff like that.
One thing you need to try is there's, like, in the options, there's, like, a fighting mode. There's, like, the one you have, which is you pull the trigger, it swings the weapon, and then there's one where you basically have sort of one-to-one control with one of the analog sticks. And apparently, like, it's one of those things where if you don't like it, you really don't like it. But if you do like it, you love it and you use it all the time. So you should try that. And also, don't ever play it on your own, because it doesn't really work on its own.
Well, I mean, even when you try to play it on your own, I mean, I guess, you know, you can kind of close it off and you can do whatever, but it's kind of like an open party, so people can join you. You can join people at any time. You can drop out and go back into single player at any time. Which, again, works because, you know, you want the ability, like, if somebody drops you in your multiplayer game, you don't want that to end the entire session. And it's just like, oh, we'll just take you back to that single player save point you have and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. You get a lot of different weapons. I've gotten paddles, I've gotten crowbars, pipes, sickles, a knife, hatchet. I understand why. I'm not sure how I feel about, like, right now it's not a hindrance. It's more of a strategic element, but I'm kind of curious to see how, like, weapons break and stamina flows by the end of the game, because, like, if enemies just kind of wear you out, that might be a pain in the ass, but you can, you know, it also has RPG elements, so you can upgrade it so that, like, my health right now regens, and I can behead people with weapons, and my objects have, like, what, 15% more damage or something like that already. So it's a very promising game, and also I like the fact that the enemies level up to you.
Yeah.
So it's not like Borderlands, where, like, sometimes you can kind of be overwhelmed because, like, your friends are in a much further place than you are. Like, it's great if you want to level up really quickly. Like, you can just go with your friends, like, level 20, like, level 2. I used to Borderlands when I haven't played Borderlands 2, but here it's like, you know, like, you find, like, I was just playing with my friend who just started, and, like, I was seeing level 6 and 7 infected because that's what level I am instead of level 1. So, I mean, hopefully I don't sour on this. I got it because it was $10 on Xbox Live, and I have three friends who we were looking for a new co-op game, and this looks right about alley because it's the type of co-op game that has some longevity to it, but it's also not something that's, you know, it's not a commitment. It can just kind of go fun with it.
I think the best thing about Dead Island is it's kind of the kind of thing. It's if you imagine like an 80s B movie as a video game, you get Dead Island.
Yeah, I mean it's a horror film, and some of it is kind of I guess some of it kind of plays to that. Some of the dialogue is hokey. Like, I picked the big, I don't know the characters' names. I picked the big bro, you black guy.
And, like, he's the best one.
And, like, I imagine so, because, like, my first co-op game, there's four of us. with the same character.
Yeah.
And, like, one of the first things he says is, like, when you accept the mission, he says hunky dory. And I'm just like, did he just say that? Like, you wouldn't expect that from this character to say hunky dory.
The only real problem I had was with Dead Island was the it seems to be skewed towards the black guy, because he specializes in blunt weapons, and the Chinese woman, because she specializes in sharp weapons. Whereas the other two, well, we've got the black woman, she specializes in guns, and even then, that's not a great focus of the game. And the other guy is throwables, and of which you don't do a lot of throwing stuff in the game. So
I was going to ask, does it, like, make a big, does it, is, it, like, is your traits a big deal in the game? Because it seems like it's just kind of your starting stats.
I don't know. Like, just the fact that it says that, you know, she's better with guns and throwables, so you assume
why,
so.
Yeah, that's why I picked that guy, because he's better with melee. But I was looking at, I mean, like, so far, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I was wondering if there's, like, a major gameplay element.
I think the biggest difference is in the skill trees. I know the I think the woman, the black woman, is she has like a tanky tree, so she can take a lot of damage if she needs to.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like Borderlands in that everybody kind of what you have to. Okay, that makes sense. Because I was telling my friends, like I picked, like I was telling them that my character is focused on melee, but I guess because that's his thing, that's why. So it's kind of like you probably have two of the same skill trees, and then maybe a middle one that's different. Okay, that works. Again, it's an RPG and stuff like that, but it seems like everybody's going to succeed no matter what. So that's good. But yeah, I mean, for $10, I don't feel like I could go wrong. Like, it could probably deteriorate, but like right now, it just seems like it's a really fun, simple, different first-person game, since it's not really focused on guns and stuff like that, and you can kick the crap out of zombies.
I'm not terribly looking forward to Riptide, though. It just looks the same. Like, literally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I can see how this game could get monotonous. I'm curious to see if it carries on to the end. But yeah, right now I don't really crave more Dead Island. Maybe this has a really amazing. I don't even want to say that because it's an open world game, and with that, you know, it just comes that inherent problem with stories is that you just kind of lose focus on it after a while because you have so many side quests and side missions that the main story is just kind of something you do to open up more of the game.
Yeah.
So yeah. At some point during this conversation, I think Chad joined us as well.
Fuck my ISP. Fuck him right in the mouth.
Have you been playing anything new?
New.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing.
Okay. So we're going to kick it on over to news, and because this has been a theme running throughout this past month or so, we're going to kick it off with Assassin's Creed 4, which...
Before we move on to that...
Wait!
I did forget that I was playing the cave as well, and I don't like it.
What's wrong with it?
Also, the Hyrule Historia, and that's... I don't like the controls. The controls are very bad. The humor is hit or miss, and the puzzles are either okay or this is very monotonous, like back and forth. It's just very disappointing, especially from a Ron Gilbert game. And then I have been playing the Hyrule Historia, and that's a cool game. So back to you.
Okay, so yeah, Assassin's Creed 4 proving that pirate ships are leaky, has all but been confirmed, and like everything has come out ahead of this. The official embargo for this game comes out tomorrow when this show drops Monday. But within the
seen the trailer already.
We've seen the trailer. We've seen screenshots. We've seen the world map. We know the setting. We know when it comes out. We know what systems it's on. The only thing we haven't seen, which is really odd since we had a 2-minute trailer, is we haven't actually seen gameplay. So
we have though, because there's five Assassin's Creed games out already.
Maybe it's new gameplay. Yeah.
No. It's not.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it always pains me to say this, and it's always depressing to talk about Assassin's Creed because I loved it so much, but I am so tired of it now. I do not care. It's very hard for me to care about Assassin's Creed now after not liking Revelations and being disappointed with 3. However, the best parts of 3 for me was the naval stuff, and the absolute best parts. So while just even thinking about Assassin's Creed still does not do anything for me, the fact that I'm getting the pirate game that I've always wanted does intrigue me. I just wish it wasn't under the Assassin's Creed moniker, but...
Well, I'm kind of curious about that as well, because that was kind of one of the reasons I was looking forward to Assassin's Creed 3, is because it was a change of settings, a change of characters, and, you know, in a time period that games doesn't generally cover, and then it just turns out to be more Assassin's Creed. And I feel like this is probably going to be the same thing, where it's like, oh, it's a new setting. Well, it's a kind of new setting. It's a prequel. It's a kind of a new character.
Wait, it's a prequel?
Yeah, I think it 4. Deals with the dad or the grandfather of the character.
4, prequel. 4. Prequel. What?
Well, I don't get the naming convention anymore. Because
there isn't one, obviously, because we've got 2 again, still 2, 3, 4, but it's actually the first one, so...
Well, no, it's not a prequel to 3. It's not a prequel to 1.
Oh, well, okay. four on set before the one before me. Oh.
Yeah, then that's it. Because I always
to count with Ubisoft.
I thought that
better than learn to count with Square Enix.
Well, it's better than learn to count with anybody really at this point in time. I mean, like, what was it? Halo 4 is what, the fifth Halo game on the 360 I own. So, I mean,
yeah, but at least it's set after 3. It's the only one set after 3.
yes, it is. But yeah, well, if you really want to complain about, then you get into Zelda and Kingdom Hearts.
They're not numbered, though. Well, Kingdom Hearts.
Well, Kingdom Hearts is numbered. Very rudely numbered. 358 by 2. 3D.
Yeah. Those are ridiculous.
So, yeah. So I guess Square Enix would be the king of that.
Yeah.
Or the Sonic the Hedgehog numbering system, where we finally got the fourth Sonic the Hedgehog game a couple years ago.
And then it is 4.2.
Yeah, 4.2, yeah.
any other thoughts on Assassin's Creed? I mean, I thought, you know, the characters look interesting. I think you said we don't get many pirate games.
That's the one, like, I've wanted a pirate game for so long, and the Pirates of the Caribbean one that was shown off, I don't know, what, 3 years ago? That was kind of was teased, like an open world pirate game where you get to explore the seas and it'll have missions like Skyrim. I've wanted a pirate game like that for so long, and that's what intrigues me about this. But what doesn't intrigue me about it is that it's going to be Assassin's Creed-y, and I'm kind of tired of that format at this point. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how I think a lot of people have kind of ruined their franchises this generation just by, you know, the need to kind of have them out every year. I think Assassin's Creed would have been much better if there was, like, a space between...
Oh, totally.
They would probably have a better story that way as well.
Hell yeah. I mean, that franchise was so good before it was annualized. Like, oh, man, absolutely.
But sadly, people keep buying it, so...
Yeah, I can't fault them. I mean, it's not like they're bad games, it's just kind of like they're been there, done that several times already. It's not even, like, I can understand if there was wider gaps, but it's been every year since, 2009?
The change isn't big enough between installments. Like, it needs to have a good change, and I understand that that's, it's very diplomatic to do that, because if it's too big of a change, then why is this still the same franchise and all that? I don't know.
And that actually parlays into our second main discussion, which is Kiffy B has said a lot of stuff this week.
Oh, I wish he hadn't.
And one of those things was the nature of sequels, because as you said, you change too much and people wonder, why isn't this a new IP? Why isn't this a new game? If you change too little, people are like, this is basically an expansion pack. We wanted something different. So, you know, with sequels or franchises, you're always kind of stuck in that road where you want to change stuff, but you can't change too much because there's a certain familiarity that people appreciate about it. So you're kind of stuck in this road where you want to evolve, but you can't because you don't want to alienate fans. And we kind of mentioned this with your impressions.
Wait, hang on. Is this Cliffy B talking about not alienating people? He alienates people from his opinions every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah, but, I mean, you don't buy Cliffy B games.
That's kind of good, isn't it? Yeah.
As outspoken and, you know, and especially being that he's doing it when he doesn't have a company. He's not working on any game, so he can beat his vocal. But, yeah, I agree with him. I said it before, is that you're kind of damned if you don't with sequels, because
but I mean, it's just a case of fix what was wrong with the last game, add some stuff, obviously, because just fixing stuff isn't going to go too well, and just sort of keep it, don't release too often, you know, don't release every year, every 2 or 3 years.
I think that brings up its own set of problems, though, and I think, you know, using Zelda as an example, I think because Zelda releases so infrequently, at least on the consoles, is that there's an era expectations that everyone that comes out needs to be this radically different experience, And so, you know, if you come out
Nintendo does a very good job of just not listening to people and just doing what it knows it's right with Zelda.
Yeah, but the problem is, and you'll see this with Zelda fans, and, you know, like, oh, you know, it's been the same game since Ocarina of Time. It's been the same game since... Which isn't true, but that's neither here nor there. But that's kind of the argument. And the thing is, it's like, you know, there's really been four Zelda games since Ocarina of Time on a console space. Three, actually. No, four. Majora's Mask is radically different than Ocarina of Time. But that's the one people tend to skip over. So it's one of those things. And then you take something like Call of Duty, which comes out every year. So you don't really expect radical changes from them, but at the same time, people do get tired of it and complain about it. So, you know, like, you can't have it too infrequently because people want these changes, and if it's not enough changes, they wonder. And if it's, you know, if it's the same thing too often, you just kind of get bored of it. So you have to find a perfect... I guess the closest franchise it is, and I'm sure people will probably find other ones, would be Kirby. Because Kirby has so many diverse genres and games in his roster that it's hard to say that it's been the same Kirby game. Like, Epic Yarn is different from Return to Dreamland, which is different from Mass Attack, and those are the last three games.
I think the main series, Final Fantasies, not including the sequels to specific Final Fantasies, does it really well as well. Because it is the same franchise. They have like elements that carry over, references, things like that, but ultimately they are extremely, vastly different from the one previous to it, regardless if their fans want another Final Fantasy VII or, you know, whatever their favorite Final Fantasy is.
Well, that kind of has the same problem that Zelda has, though, because obviously there are people that love 7 but hate 8, and then love 9
absolutely.
But hate 10. And, yeah, oh, 11's an MMO, I'm not going to play that in a million years,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's what I respect, because they're making the game that they believe is the evolution to the last game, and they're making the game that they want to make, and the moment that they start, you know, being like, okay, this is what the fans want, that's the moment that Final Fantasy 13-2 happens, and then still nobody buys it, even though they made that game for the fans.
See, for me, I thought 13-2 was a game people didn't want, because not many people enjoyed 13.
Yeah, but that's why they made 13-2, because people didn't enjoy 13, and then they made it tailoring to what they wanted 13 to be, right?
It's an interesting stance.
Well, I think for the most part, people get sequels right, and there are a few exceptions. I forgot what I was going to say. I lost my train of thought, but you know. Game developers aren't stupid, and even when they do make mistakes, you know, they own up and they fix it. You know, Insomniac, for example, they made Resistance 2 a more, I say, Call of Duty-like experience, where they made it so it had regen health and a two-weapon limit, and, you know, that wasn't right, you know, and they fixed it for Resistance 3. So, I think for the most part, people get it right. They just, like, overdo it if they annualize things, and that I think annualizing a series ruins it more than releasing infrequently, because obviously you're really into playing a game if it releases, I don't know, 3 years after the first one, whereas if you get another one, then okay, you'll play it, and then you get another one the next year, and it's like, okay, maybe, yeah, sure. And then the fourth one comes out for the fourth year in a row, and it's like, do I really want to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, sequels are very tricky. And it's not just video games. I think movies go through this as well. I mean, you've all heard of, you know, the third movie curse, or the second sequel slump, where a lot of sequels are just kind of like the first movie on repeat.
Yeah.
Unlike movies, though, with video games, the sequel is usually a lot better than the main game, because they usually improve upon the mechanics of life.
Yeah, they improve upon the mechanics, but, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, to some people it won't make it better, because it's just kind of like, oh, it's like a bug fix. Right? I mean, like, Assassin's Creed 1 to 2, I think, is a huge example of that.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
A lot of people just, you know, like Assassin's Creed 1 had a lot of novel ideas that just wasn't very well executed in Assassin's Creed 2 fully realized that, and then they just kind of had nowhere to go other than the fact that this is a popular franchise, so we're going to have to keep making them. So, yeah. He also talked about microtransactions and the nature of that beast. And I found that
I don't like his stance on microtransactions at all.
I agree with his stance on microtransactions.
Me too.
Can somebody explain?
The thing I disagree with the most is he said that EA are no worse than Valve are, and that is fucking wrong. I don't care who says that. That is wrong.
I think what he's saying with that, and I do kind of agree, is like it doesn't. Like a lot of people say EA is worse just because EA's general business practice tends to be anti-consumer to a lot of people. But I mean, buying Hats in Team Fortress 2 is no different than buying gun skins in Gears of War, or
no,
buying...
it is because there was a period where TF2 you had to pay for it, right? But even when you had to pay for it, it was not a $60 game.
Okay, so yes, okay, I agree with you that the base model may be different, like, you know, buying a game. But
right, and now you don't even have to pay anything for it, and if you want something in the game that you can get it for free, or you can pay for it for a small amount that's not that big, to be honest. I mean, it could be lower than what it is, but it's not that big. Whereas, first day, Gears of War 3, oh, I paid fucking £40 for your game, and now you want me to pay more for some skin. No.
Yeah, but you don't need the skins. Like, the skins aren't a vital part of the game.
Yeah, but they're still charging me more for something that I kind of technically bought, even, and they're just holding back.
Yeah,
but
you
who
don't
cares?
Need them.
If you don't like it, don't buy it.
Like I can understand. Like, if it was Gears of War and it's like,
God.
Okay.
And not to mention, it's like, you could. It's not general business practices of EA, it's everything that EA does. Everything. The Sim City is always online, so that's not going to work for the first week that game releases.
The same thing.
Well,
with, like,
now you're just distracting from the original issue.
Well, it's not. I'm not distracting from the original issue at all. The original issue is that EA are no worse than Valve when that is.
You see, that's, and this is what
that
I was trying to get at.
Specifically in regards to microtransactions.
Yeah, and microtransactions are no different. As I said, as a whole, a lot of people tend to hate EA's business practices. But he wasn't saying that. He was saying about the action of microtransactions. It's no different than buying skins or, you know, like. Basically, they sell stuff that you don't need, but there are people out there who would buy them. And Valve does the same thing with the hats and all that other stuff. You don't need them for TF2, but they sell them anyhow. It's the same way you can buy skins and games and stuff like that. So, on that notion, I agree with him. I actually agree with him on the notion of microtransactions. If I was a business and I could find a way to make money without doing much work, I would take advantage of that. As a consumer, it is up to you to decide not to support this. Where I disagree with him, and I disagree with a lot of people who react to this, is I do think people should be vocal about this because you don't want to take it quietly. But I think you need to be vocal and you need to back it up with your money because it's kind of like that old Modern Warfare 2 joke where, like, you know, the boycott Modern Warfare 2 because it had no dedicated servers, and like the day the game came out, like 95% of the people in that group were playing the game. That doesn't send Activision a message that you're not going to stand for this. It's just like, oh, whatever, we're just going to succumb to them.
And I, previously in this episode, I discussed my disappointment in Dead Space 3, but I do feel that Dead Space 3 handled microtransactions very beautifully, because they're non-intrusive in the least. Like, I did not even know that they were there, and I wouldn't have known that they were there if I didn't already know that they had microtransactions beforehand.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the whole. I remember when Gotham City Impostors came out, and people were upset that there were like 1,000 pieces of microtransaction DLC for the game, and it was all stuff that you could unlock in the game naturally. It was just if you wanted to not fade, if you didn't want to go through the grind. Like some people have, you know, some people do have issues with you're basically paying to win because you unlock stuff that people pay for stuff that people unlock, but you also have that option to do if you wanted to. And just because you buy something doesn't necessarily make you good at it or with it. So yeah, I agree with him on microtransactions. I also agree with people who are vocal about it, people who shout and scream and are upset about that. And I fully support them in doing that. I think, again, I just think you also need to back it up beyond your words and show them. It's the same reason that, I mean, partially now it's just not of an interest. It's the same reason I didn't buy Mass Effect 3 at launch, is because I didn't agree what they were doing with I even forget the character's name, but that DLC that was included only with the limited edition Mass Effect 3, and then you had to buy it for like $10 at launch. And I thought that was a crummy practice, so I just didn't buy the game, and now it's just, I have no interest in it anymore. So, yeah. Did Kiffy B say anything else this week?
He told a lot of people to fuck off, and he called a lot of people motherfuckers. And I think, I think Cliffy B needs to realise that if you like, there's part of me doesn't like, kind of likes that he doesn't apologise for himself. But if you want people to sort of take what you have to say seriously, don't do that.
I agree with you to a certain extent, and I think this this kind of happens with a couple of... I think social media has really brought this out in people. A lot of people don't know that they need to be professional.
And I think the worst one is Hideki Kamiya.
Oh, yeah.
I did not like him at all.
Amusing.
I find him amusing as well. I think just because of those... Like, there's certain people, I think, just because they cultivated that image of themselves, where it's just kind of one of those things that I accept. But yeah, it is, I can see, you know, like, you don't want, you know, especially if you're like PR or marketing, these people have to be nightmares for you, because it does turn people off to your product. It does, you know, I've always been against insulting your home, your users, and I think game journalists do this all the time, which is why I don't follow anyone.
Well, Tucker readers like it, so, you know.
Yeah, but especially there's a war between journalists and Gaff or Neil Gaff, for instance, and I just feel like insulting your audience, insulting the people who you want to support your product.
Well, not only that, is the game journalists enable Neil Gaff.
Well, yeah, it's a two-way street, because they like the attention, because at the end of the day, it is the greatest gathering of gamers on the internet, and you kind of need that to, you know, promote yourself. Which is why so many of them are members of GAF. It's the reason why people like Pact are a member of GAF, is because you kind of crave that attention and that spotlight. But yeah, it's something that you need to take into account, that you can't get into a squabble with everybody. You need thicker skin if you're going to be a member of something like this, of any entertainment field, because it's not just gaming, it's movies, it's, you know, it's journalists and all mediums. Like, you just can't go to bat against these people you think are beneath you, because you just come off looking petty in the end.
I think a lot of indie developers also fall into the same category.
Sorry, did I say something?
Killfish, definitely. I watched Indie Game, the movie, and instead of coming out of it being like, yeah, I respect these guys, I come out of it being like, this movie didn't really paint any of these guys in a very good light for me, because they all seem very rude and crass and not professional, and they're like going out of their way to say, fuck you.
Edmund McMillan. I can put up with him, but anyone else...
I can put up with Jonathan Blow. I kind of find him endearing, but Phil Fish, one of the guys who made Super Meat Boy, the bald one.
It was probably Tommy.
Right.
The thinner one.
Like, very vocal, very rude, and then you see at one point Phil Fish accepting a reward, and he's like, fucking right, and I'm like, really? And yeah, again, they go to the way to say fuck you to all these other developers, but a lot of AAA developers love indie games. You will never see it in reverse.
I think one of the things, and, you know, part of it is just kind of getting your name out there, but a lot of times I agree, it does turn me off. Like, oh, you know, like it's nothing but tight. Like, we all kind of say the same stuff, but at some point you need to be respectful, because then it does make you... It's kind of like if you're an indie musician and you say, like, there's nothing in the mainstream but crappy pop music and stuff like that. Like, it just makes you sound petty and desperate.
I think the best thing was when when Phil Fish had that problem with submitting a patch and he had to pay for it, and then what was it? He was like, "Oh, it's only so many months until our exclusivity contract ends." I was like, "Yeah, but you called my gaming platform a spreadsheet machine, so that's not going to make me buy your game."
Yeah.
That's the double-edged sword of when they're like, "Oh, fuck you, Sony, fuck you, Microsoft," when they need those companies to put their games on.
I've never understood that. Like, I'm not going to stop myself from playing a game I think will be fun or interesting just because I don't like the guy that made it. Like, that just seems really backwards to me.
Oh, it's half and half, because I think And this is why I tried not to follow people from entertainment or, you know, their personal lives. It's the Michael Jackson effect where a lot of people, like, I've always been a huge fan of Michael Jackson's music, but the personal stuff that surrounded him kind of turns you off. So you want to separate the two, the identity of the guy who sings the music and his personal character. And it's one of those things where, like, with video games, especially as indie developers, where it's like the guy behind the game, it's like it turns you off where you just don't want to see their product anymore.
To be fair, for me and Phil Fish, it was easy because I didn't care about Fez in the first place. But
I think you know that's part, you know, that's part of it. It's like if you have this negative reaction from fans, like people are just going to see into your game, and people just aren't going to pay attention to it. There are going to be people who buy it no matter what, but you really don't want to like piss off anybody, and that's what the indie developers do, and. They show that they have the creative abilities, but some of them don't have the business or the tack to actually engage with people. As a recent example, you know, like Retro City Rampage dude is actually pretty good at interacting with the audience.
He's really cool.
And, you know, he takes time out, like, you know, this week, I think, like, every day or so, he's taking out, like, 20 minutes to answer any questions that people had. He doesn't really have a big ego about him, and he's open about his game and stuff like that. That's simple, but going out of your way to say, like, oh, we're going to reinvent the wheel, and especially if you don't reinvent the wheel, tends to turn people off. And I guess speaking about game development and gamers, it came out this week, because they started a Kickstarter, that it takes $150,000 to introduce a new character into Skullgirls. And people were upset about that one because they were asking for money for DLC ahead of time. But
I think they offered to give out codes for it.
Yeah, but I think people just, you know, like a lot of people are like, oh, it shouldn't take them that much money to create two new characters for DLC.
Well, the thing is I don't think what people understand is we're talking about a fighting game, and without the characters, the game has no gameplay at all.
Yeah,
so
I think that's what people are getting at. But I think it also speaks to another thing, and I think this is more on the industry side than it is on the gamer side, is that companies just aren't forthcoming with their budgets. Like, we don't know how much it takes to make. Like, you can get estimates about games and stuff like that, but you don't know how much it takes to make a game. So nobody has a perceived value of how much it actually does cost to make a video game. And this kind of goes hand in hand with the discussion that gamers had this week about the. I think EA said that they were looking to. I think they misspoke, but they were saying that, you know, games might start off this upcoming generation at $70, and gamers were upset about that as well. And I'm on that side because I'm not going to spend $70 for a game. I hardly spend $60 as it is. But it's the reality of the situation that game development costs.
But you will though.
The thing is, I would say
the last game I paid $60 for was I want to say Batman Arkham City. And that
I would say with EA, though, it's a bit different because EA is a big company, right? And they're a big company that's obsessed with artificially inflating. We need this many sales, you know, we need to spend this much on a game. Whereas an indie developer, obviously, is going to spend as little as they possibly can. So I would say that EA is a different situation because, you know, they have this negative reputation among people already, and they've just said that they're going to try and introduce microtransactions to every game they make, and now they're telling us that we're going to have to pay more for the games up front as well, even though they're the ones that are causing game budgets to go up for themselves.
Yeah.
As long as I'm able to rent games still for the PS4 and the Durango, then I'm good.
Well,
but we'll see.
We'll find out about that. I think the reality of the situation, whether you agree with the industry or whether you agree with the gamers, is that there needs to be a major shakeup in this industry. It's an unsustainable model. It's been an unsustainable model this entire generation. as somebody pointed out to me, we've had the addition of online passes, DLC, microtransactions, $10 increases in average prices of games, and companies are still hurting.
Yeah.
So it's not that they aren't finding enough sources of revenue. It's that at some point, what you're making
and not to mention is people seem to be obsessed with this whole idea of like race to the bottom, where to the point now on PC they're giving away games for nothing, and it's just all microtransactions in inverted quotes because they're supposed to be micro. You know, I think there also needs to be a change in mindset from people buying the games. I don't have any problem paying $30 for a game. You know. Just what you need to do is make it worth my while, and I'm not talking about putting multiplayer in it because that's increasing your development costs. I'm talking about making it a good game that I want to pay $30 for.
I think, and you know, this is a discussion I think that can go around and around. Is that we've seen good games come out that just don't sell well, and it's not just about making a good game; it's about making a game that kind of stands out. Because I'm sure we can name hundreds of games this generation.
It's funny because EA is a company that's also unwilling to do that as well.
What, make good games?
Make games that stand out.
I mean, they make games that stand out. I would think that their beef is probably always not supporting them properly. And I think a lot of major publishers are guilty of that, where they make interesting titles and then they just kind of send them out there without... You know,
if EA is a company that soils us with games like Medal of Honor Warfighter, you know, I don't, like, you need to concentrate on making every game good and not just, let's just ape what's ever popular now, you know?
Well, I hate to be the EA defender on this show, but EA was actually pretty good at the start of this generation.
I bought Mirror's Edge brand new for $30. I bought Dead Space 1 for $30 brand new. You know, when it came out.
I think it just turned out at some point that gamers weren't supporting these novel ideas that they were putting forth. And, you know, the blame could be on gamers, the blame could be on EA.
And there's also a sort of an issue with there was just too many games coming out.
Well, I mean, that's always an issue. And I think that's one of the things that, the only way to fix that would be what we had in like the old days where, like, you didn't have, like the blockbuster model is like we have major games come out week after week after week, and sometimes more than one in a week. I mean, look at this month coming up. We have Tomb Raider, we have God of War Ascension, we have Gears of War Judgment, we have Luigi's Mansion 2, we have Monster Hunter Tri, we have, there's a ton of amazing games coming out in the next month.
They can't Lego City Undercover?
Yeah. Ton of amazing games coming out across all different.
BioShock Infinite's also coming out.
BioShock Infinite. We can go on, and you know, there's only 4 weeks in this month, and we have what named 8 games, so that's at least 2 a week. Some weeks are worse than others because I think Luigi's Mansion, Lego City, Monster Hunter, Need for Speed, and BioShock all out on the same week. So at the end of the day, some of those games just aren't going to do anything because the market can't sustain having 3 or 4 major games come out every week, or they're only in a month. The only way to kind of fix that would be if the industry got together and be like, okay, you know what, I'm going to do more. I'll do one game in March, you do one game in April.
Oh, I thought that would never happen.
No, because it is a competition, and this is kind of why we're in this, I think part of the reason we're in this kind of like race, you know, like you say race to the bottom, is because companies like EA, Activision, Epic, Valve can kind of afford to drive up costs of development where they push people out, like THQ and Midway, and you know, companies that just can't make AAA titles, and they're forcing themselves to compete on that level instead of trying to stick to like B tier titles, and then they just don't have the money or the capital to continue with that fight. So at some point, I do fear that we'll eventually get kind of into a very stagnant kind of multi-mega publishers, where you have like EA, Activision, Ubisoft, and that's about it. But yeah, we shall see. But yeah, I mean, I guess going back to the original point, which was the crowdsourcing for DLC characters, I guess what my question is, do you, as a gamer, care how much it costs?
Well, you have to at some point because it's the reason why they're charging us $60 and talking about charging $70 and stuff. I mean, it's nice to know how much it costs for one or two characters because it means it kind of puts a perspective on things. Because I won't buy that DLC for this, or I'll pay this much for it instead.
Well, see, I was going to say, I think that's kind of what I was driving at. It's like, as a consumer, I'm not going to say, oh, $70 game and say, oh man, okay, I understand. They have to spend $10 million more because they're on new hardware and stuff like that. Like, to me, it's just an increase. I don't care on their end. Like, you know, people are going to say, but you need them to be healthy. But I, as a consumer, they need to make products that I want to pay for at a reasonable price. Like, you don't have movie tickets go up every time a movie budget goes up.
Well, unless you live where I come from, and then they do. But that's just the same.
Well, movie ticket prices go up, but it's just to do about the cost of movies and just more about the general inflation of running businesses in certain areas. Like, right now I pay, I think, $13.50 on average for a movie ticket, which I know
really?
Is a... I live in New York City.
That's
so
cheap compared to what I have to pay.
It's one of the most expensive places in the...
That's cheap what I have to pay. I have to pay... mine is £10 a ticket, which is about... $15-16.
Oh, I feel sorry for you folks. No wonder international grosses have been going up. But yeah, I mean, again, cost of movie tickets is like, you know, you don't pay more for the Avengers because it costs $200 million to make than you do for something like, I guess Argo, which probably costs $20 million to make. And it's the same thing with games.
Argo did not cost $20 million to make.
How much did Argo cost to make?
Oh, way more than that. Salaries alone would put it up to 50.
I was about to say, maybe Ben Affleck's contract, but he's also like the director and artist of this stuff. I was just giving an example, and Argo cost $44.5 million, which still is far from the ballpark of something like The Avengers.
That's pretty good. I was only $6 million off.
So, yeah. I mean, and The Avengers, just for comparison's sake, cost $220 million to make. I mean,
200 of that was Robert Downey Jr.'s salary.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Robert Downey Jr. was cheap because I think he signed his contract with Iron Man, and that was before this kind of take off. I think beyond the Avengers, like Iron Man 3 and beyond, he's got a lot more money coming his way. But yeah, the Avengers also went on to make It went on to make $1.5 billion. So I think they made up for the money somewhere.
Yeah, maybe.
Argo went on to gross over $200 million. So again, you know, this is getting four times its money back, and Avengers is getting 5 times its money back. So, you know, and they both did it on the same ticket price. I mean, granted, Avengers also has inflation for 3D and IMAX and stuff like that. And I, you know, it's just one of those things where I think movies, music, and almost every other entertainment field has another source of revenue that gaming doesn't have. You know, you can't see games in movie theaters often enough anyhow. You don't go to live game in concerts often enough. And even then, I don't think that goes back to the industry.
No, it doesn't go back to the industry.
So, I mean, maybe that's something. I mean, I think honestly what... And I guess a lot of games wouldn't be keen to this, but I think what they need to do is find other ways to market. They need to, you know, get video game t-shirts, get video game toys, get video game. But, you know, people will say they sold out, and then, you know, you kind of have that stigma of being for kids. And I think that's one of these things that the industry needs to get over. If it wants to make money, look at Skylanders. It makes a ton of money with toys, more so than games, I think.
We need to bring back gaming hotlines where you pay like $2 a minute for somebody to tell you codes for Super Nintendo game.
Well, I think the internet has also killed off a lot of that business. Like,
I
know. Like, strategy guides are kind of a... like, you only get strategy guides if they have like great art in them now. You don't get them for an actual game.
Yeah, I think I got the Final Fantasy 13 one.
It was just a line running throughout the book. Just go forward.
It was really pretty. I couldn't help it. They're like, hey, you get this individually numbered thing. And I'm like, individual numbers? Fuck.
That was actually good because it was made by a company called like Piggy Bank. And the previous strategy guides were made by Brady Games. And those strategy guides were terrible.
Yeah, the last strategy guide I got, I think, was Phantom Hourglass. And that was because it came with a new version of Phantom Hourglass when you picked it up.
Wow.
Both of which I thought were overvalued after I paid Phantom Hourglass.
See, that feels a little backwards to me.
but, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there are other ways, you know. And we're going to start seeing stuff like that. We have video game movies coming out. Hopefully they turn out good. But I do think they need to embrace the wider market. I think, you know, like Destiny, for example, the idea of kind of having these cross-device gaming experiences, like you can game on your cell phone, you can game on your tablet and stuff like that, will also kind of help. You know, every little bit helps, but at the end of the day, this industry does need a shake-up in a business model, because it's just not sustainable for anybody.
I honestly think that this generation, so PS4, Wii U, whatever the new Xbox is going to be called, will be the last one, because companies just can't continue selling at a loss for years and then hoping people buy it back, like equate it in software.
Well, I mean, it's a model that works. Like, I mean, that's the printer model. You know, you sell them the printer for cheap, and you charge them up the ass for ink. But I think what video games need to do, and it's kind of what the Xbox and the PS3, and to some extent the Wii U are doing, is like become an entertainment hub, because that's what people want. I think the problem with that is that if you're going to sell for iOS, you need to cut the price. And I know it's going to suck. You don't want to take iOS like $200-$300 per system. But I think as an entertainment center, a console is more attractive at $200, $250 than it is at $400, $500 bucks. So yeah. Anything else you folks want to touch on before we begin to wrap?
Other than Jennifer Lawrence, no.
Jennifer Lawrence is so adorable. So yeah, I mean, I think that's about an hour, but we had something set up for the 100th episode, and it's just been really busy, so I have a bunch of gaming questions, and I'm just going to rattle off one randomly here, and then we'll try to fit them in it on. So let's see. Oh, this is a random one and interesting. Which two games do you think would make an awesome crossover?
Halo and Destiny. That's easy, though, isn't it?
That's not a crossover. I mean, it's
the same game, yeah. I don't know, actually. That's a very good. It's a very good question. I'll have to think about that.
I know this will never happen because of what you'd have to do, but I think it would be interesting just to see Japan's reaction if it was Pokemon and Monster Hunter.
Oh, crap. That would be good.
All the pun opportunities. Pokemon Monster Hunter.
I still really want Street Fighter / Mortal Kombat.
How about Street Fighter and Tekken?
Oh,
how
about that?
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. League of Legends and Super Smash Brothers.
who would make it, though? Nintendo or Riot?
It'd have to be Riot. Nintendo doesn't
know what make it. If Riot make it, it would just be unbalanced as shit.
Madden NFL and Call of Duty.
Either way, like, would you not play?
Perfect, because it means that, like, all of those people that play those games could just buy one game and that's it. Don't need to buy anything else.
I don't know. I would play the hell out of a MOBA based on like all of the Smash Brothers characters.
I think Nintendo franchises have a lot of interesting capabilities to expand beyond. Like, the fighting. I could see mobile. I can also see an RTS with Nintendo characters. But, I mean, like,
that would be quite funny, actually.
But, I mean, if you think of... I mean, I think if they took it the other way, where you kind of went with Nintendo Villains, like, you have Ganondorf and his people, you have Bowser and his Koopalings, and you'd have, you know, all these various things you can kind of put in there. But, yeah, Nintendo has a lot of potential to expand there. The problem is, and the people are going to complain, it's just more Nintendo games and new IPs, because apparently Nintendo Mobile wouldn't count. I think... this is more of a TV show crossover. It's not really much of a crossover, but I always thought, I'm still surprised that the LA Noire engine hasn't been used for like a Law and Order type show, or Law and Order type game, or any of those procedurals.
Yeah, I'm surprised that I haven't seen that tech come back as well. Yeah, I would like to see that.
Well, it's not the fact that the tech hasn't come back, it's more everyone realized, shit, we've got to do better faces now.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. You can rent out the technology game industry is running out of time. And I just feel like that would be one of those things where you know, like, we don't have, like, we've had shows, we've had games based on Grey's Anatomy and all these other things, but they've always been kind of bad. But now you have a template that works and that people are familiar with. Just throw in whatever you want. Like, put a season of Law and Order in there and just have the characters voice it and whatever. I guess it'll also be expensive, but Law and Order, these are popular shows that people watch because procedurals. And so I think it has potential. But anyhow, anything else before we wrap up?
I genuinely can't think of anything.
Toe Jam and Earl and Earthworm Jim.
That reminds me of an idea I always had, which I always thought would be cool if they had, you know, a Christmas special with the toys from, like, the Forgotten Toys or whatever, if you just kind of had, like, a game with all these forgotten franchises.
Yeah. That'd be
like
cool.
Like Besto and Earthworm Jim and Echo the Dolphin and Vector Man.
That is...
Bill Hartman's dead, man. We can't have Blasto.
You can have him be silent. Like, maybe that's why he had to go here. It's because he lost his voice.
In fact, I would like to see anything.
So kind of like what they tried to do with Epic Mickey. Awesome.
Yeah, but Epic Mickey didn't have anything. Like, Epic Mickey was one of those things that made more sense as a movie. Because, like, video gamers don't have any connections with those characters.
Yeah,
it's like... So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think Mickey Mouse, you know, I wouldn't use that template because I'm not a huge fan of the game, and I think it'd be better fit for an RPG than it would be for a platformer or something of the kin. But anyhow, we're going to wrap. So for Daniel, Chad, Phil, and myself, this has been Dual Worlds in episode 102. Auf Wiedersehen for now.